This call is being recorded.
Welcome to Ask Gwen, everyone. If Ask Gwen can put on a speakerphone, that would help. And my first programming announcement is, please, people, please, now I'm going to say this really nicely, because Ask Gwen is an interview show, you have to send my assistant and myself good email addresses so we can contact you. My assistant just told me she got another booking for Friday with a bad email address. And I'm like, what is that? So please help us out there. And you can give me or my assistant good email addresses. And that will make you and me and my assistant very, very happy. My second programming announcement is I dropped another book on you guys. I dropped the Smile with Dictation book on you guys. That will be in the show notes. Please click on it and buy a copy and share it with your network, because you guys asked me for that book and now it's finally out, and I want to teach you guys how to write books using speech dictation. But enough of my programming announcement. I'm going to let Mr. Egg take it away.
Hi, Wynn. My name is Eric Chiappetta, and I'm the host of a podcast called Chef or Deaf. And basically, the podcast revolves around food and beverage industry, entrepreneurs. We interview folks about mental health and addiction, which runs pretty prevalent in our industry. So it's a fact-finding mission. It's a public service. But we do a 90-minute show, and I generally do a panel of four people, three people, two people, one-on-one interviews. It's just a who's who of icons in the industry, mountain movers, some people with just really great, interesting stories. That's kind of Chef or Deaf in a nutshell.
And you're one of your big people committed suicide. Anthony Bourdain committed suicide, I believe, last summer. And then Kate Spade, one of my big people, because I'm in the fashion journalist industry, follows suit. So we had two industry titans commit suicide, even though they were in different industries. But my God, I didn't realize that Anthony Bourdain, you would think he lives this life like no one's business, but on the inside, he was struggling. So that said, Eric, what do we do?
That's always the million-dollar question. The second show that I did in my very first season was a mental health and addiction show, and I had some folks on from Culinary Outreach, Hospitality, and Wellness. Their acronym is CHOW. They're located here in Denver, Colorado, so look them up on Facebook. They have a great resource center for folks in our industry that are looking for help. Or if you know somebody that's looking for help, please give those guys, forward that on to somebody that you think might be able to use their help. Anthony was really something that motivated me to turn what I was doing early on last year. I started writing a cookbook that really kind of turned into personal commentary, that turned into a blog, that subsequently turned into the podcast as you know it now. And Anthony's death, as you stated, was something that folks in our industry looked at as a guy that honestly had the perfect life. And what goes on in your head and your heart when you struggle with a mental health or an addiction scenario, that you sometimes close the walls up and try to hide from it, and you think you're going to be a burden on the people that love you. And that's what I think, you know, from afar, that was my view of what happened with Anthony. And it was a tragedy that just rippled through us as an industry like no other. So what I did with the podcast is really take a good hard look at my life. I had struggled with depression for years, and I made a decision that I wanted to do what I wanted to do with my life and what made me happy. And that was really the tipping point, was that if I can be a product of positivity to such a horrible negative, then that really was the finite goal for me, that's all I wanted to do.
Yeah. Well, I'm right there with you, Ag. If I could be positive in my trials and tribulations with spastic ataxia cerebral palsy, I almost forgot the middle name of my cerebral palsy. I'm so used to calling it CP, you guys, because I didn't learn officially my diagnosis until I was 31 years old. I knew I had CP since I was in seventh grade. I was diagnosed with CP back in 87, but I didn't learn my official diagnosis until I was 31 years old, when it stared me in the face, literally, on a piece of paper from a psychologist.
Right.
And so I am right there with you, taking the street of positivity street and dealing with what we have to deal with on a daily basis the most positive way we can.
And I think it's one of those things that for everybody struggles with something. Nobody is without a crutch. And I think that the more people that are out there and have a platform like you and I do to be able to shed some light on, look, you can do this too. You can be happy. You can contribute on a level that you never thought you would be, or that society possibly tells you that, you know, this is only reserved for all of us that are in a perfect shell. And that's not true at all. That if you dedicate yourself to being a force for good, all sorts of amazing doors and open for you, and amazing, amazing things happen for you that even make your life more fulfilling and more happy. And all you have to do is reach out to, I think, you know, love is all you need is what we always say. And there's absolute truth in that if you are doing selfless acts as often as you can, the improvement on your life is extraordinary. This time last year, I was in the midst of contemplating suicide. I was contemplating doing just getting out. And I was tired of me. I was tired of being who I was. And the depression had just really taken over because I let it. And there were so many people around me and that loved me that knew this was going on, that something was wrong and something was going on with me. And I pushed all of those people away, and then I was even in a worse place. I was even in a darker headspace, and I knew that there was going to be a point, that there was going to be a line that I was going to cross that would be, there was no turning back. And so I reached out to my friend who was also on my very first mental health and addiction show. Her name is Kathy Hawkins, and she was in the food and beverage industry for many, many years, and went and got a master's degree in mental health. And we talked, and I saw her, and she gave me some homework. Basically, she gave me some tools to go home and try to figure things out. And I realized early on that the more authentic I was to the world, instead of putting up all these walls and pretending to be something, that everybody that knew and loved me was within, you know, open arms all the time. They were like, this is the guy we knew you were going to be. This is the guy that we thought you could be. And, you know, many months later, I'm being interviewed on somebody else's podcast and I'm ranked number 6 for chef podcasts in the world. Like, I could have never, ever imagined any of the gifts that I've been given. And I'm eternally grateful for what we've accomplished so far.
Well, I'm happy to give you the honor and give you the talk space to help others. That's my point of ask, when to help others write that book or write or stop thinking about suicide. And quite frankly, when I was getting emotionally abused by my boss in the education space, I was depressed and almost too suicidal. Thank you, Dad, for noticing. And my dad, who I live with, is really good at noticing these things. And he goes, you are depressed. And I said, No, I'm not. I just shoved it under the rug. And
right.
When I lost my job and then lost my biological mom, too, double-edged sword there, I just thought, okay, I am going through grief right now, and then I'm not going to be depressed for the rest of my life. I've already lost my job. I can't be depressed. And so I went and found a job in the education industry 10 days after my mom died, thank you very much, and ever since then I've been happy as clam. And I think the situation, I was literally put in a dark room, and my fan base doesn't know this until today. I was literally put in a dark room, and my job was to watch kids sleep. Well, meaning I couldn't talk to anyone in that room with me, and of course I was being emotionally abused by my boss, and it's like, really? Really?
Yeah.
My dad noticed it, and my mom was still alive at the time. She didn't notice anything was wrong. My dad noticed it, and he pulled me out of that. He's like, nope. I'm pulling you out of that situation. And I lost my job in the economic crash of 2008-2009. So I'm like, this is enough for me, getting emotionally abused in the workplace and getting depressed and feeling like suicidal.
Right. Yeah, it's just one of those things where there's something that clicks inside your brain that says, you know, no, I'm a survivor. I have to give, you got to try one more time. Like I said in the show, we deal with a lot of entrepreneurs and the island that entrepreneurs live on, because you really have to wall yourself off and seclude yourself to just dedicate everything you can to your business. And depression runs rampant with entrepreneurs because, you know, there is no handbook. I mean, there's a billion how-to and self-help books about, you know, how to run, you know, an atypical business. But when you're running your business, it's different from all the others. So you really feel like you're on an island. You really feel like, you know, nobody understands you. And it always goes hand in hand with depression of I can't talk to anybody about this because they're not going to speak the same language as me. Or I can't talk to anybody about this because they don't understand, because, you know, they work a 9-to-5 job and all of those things, that it's tough to try to navigate real life and your entrepreneurial life at the same time. And when you finally kind of find your center, find what matters to you, find what makes you happy. And sometimes, you know, the dollars take a while to start following you. But if you're doing what you're put on this earth to do, every door imaginable opens up for you, and people just gravitate to authenticity. And especially with the way the world is right now, you know, we're just inundated with so much negative information about, you know, what's wrong, what's wrong, what's wrong. And you have to rise above it. You have to put your head above all of that noise and say, well, I'm going to be a force for good. You know, the saying goes is the be the good in the world that you seek. And it starts with you. It starts with you doing good all of the time and trying to be the best that you can. And then you go home at the end of the day and you're able to look at yourself in the mirror and feel great about what you contributed to today. And even if it's a selfless act, I always argued with Kathy about, you know, if I'm always just seeking out doing all these good things for people to make myself feel better, that seems like a selfish act. And she goes, fine, just go with that for a while. Let's try to feel good for once. Yeah, and what it turned into was, you know, even on my show, the show is about them. It's not about me. I just provide a platform, and whatever good things happen to me is really through a side door. It's not intentional.
Yes.
I just want to give people a platform to be able to tell their story, and to that people can identify with. Because, you know, maybe you understood this a little bit at the beginning of when you started writing, and when you started doing a podcast, and when, you know, you started getting to be a bigger name, that I felt this way, that I was an imposter, that, oh, this is only reserved for some people and not me. And you have to put that away. There is no such thing as overnight successes. Everybody starts somewhere. And then you're just part of this fictitious group of, you know, really high profile podcaster or high profile writer, high profile thinker. And it all starts with just being authentic and really trying to be true to yourself at all times.
You hit the nail right on the head, Eric. You popped the words right out of my mouth. I now, for the longest time, I had imposter syndrome up until then. Like, am I an imposter? Pinch me. Is this real? Did I just publish another book? Jeez, am I coming up in the ranks of publishing? Man, Eric, you hit the nail right on the head. Now, knock it off with the imposter syndrome win.
Right. Yeah, you're part of it. You get to make your own destiny. And,
yeah,
you know, I wrote a blog post a couple of weeks ago or a week or so ago about something alluding to an imposter syndrome of, you know, there's overnight successes that people just all of a sudden, you know, Justin Bieber is just here. He's a part of the ether. He's just a part of what we are. And we all know him and everybody knows his name and his music and stuff like that. But, you know, the guy had talent, but he wrote his own songs and he performed them on YouTube. And then somebody finally picked him out of that, but he worked at it. Like, he was consistent. And I think that's the biggest thing that the imposter syndrome, that gets taken care of. If you're doing the work all of the time and you're always putting something, whether it's 15 minutes of your day, or whether it's 15 hours of your day, that you have to try to contribute to your own destiny. That I'm 48 years old, and everybody said for my entire life, they're like, dude, you have like the best radio voice ever. You should be in radio. Well, it took me 45 years to realize that I wasn't going to get discovered. No one was going to tap me on the shoulder at the bank and go, hey, let's go off to Hollywood and get you on a radio show. Like, you have to just go do the work. If you want it and you love it bad enough, you'll just end up doing it. But you'll love doing it the entire time.
Yes, I agree. Now, I am I won't be surprised if you say no to this. Is the podcast your side hustle, or do you have a full-time job in the food and beverage industry?
No, it's not. It was my side hustle about 8 months ago. And then about 5 months ago, I quit everything and dedicated this full-time to it. So I had some major lifestyle changes that I had to come to grips with. And then I had to come up with a plan on how to monetize. So we are a sponsorship-based show. I don't typically charge, I never do. I don't charge anybody to be on my show. So we are 100% sponsor-based. So if anybody's out there and they're interested in doing a sponsorship, with the show, we have a sponsorship page on my website, chefordeath.com. And, but I'm willing to wheel and deal. That's kind of guidelines, for what's on the sponsorship page and what the, there's four different levels of what you can buy, to get on the show. But I'd much rather have sponsors than not. So some of them may seem a little pricey, so I'm willing to negotiate, honestly, on everything.
Well, I applaud you for making those life changes, and I applaud you for becoming a full-time podcaster. Congratulations on that. I am
Thank you. Surely
walking away from my day job and making this my full-time income, and using my day job as pocket money, but I eventually will walk away from my day job completely because I'm in a teaching field and we get paid low. People in the food and beverage industry get paid higher than we do. So I applaud the full-time podcasters who can do it. And my next question, if you had to be educated by anyone, who would it be and why?
Oh, geez. Two names come to mind, Lewis Howes, or Gary Vaynerchuk. I follow those guys really intently. Tim Ferriss is another one. I think guys that really pioneered, especially Gary, what he did for how he built his dad's wine store, liquor store on YouTube. Lewis Howes on honestly just like where he came from, was one of those guys, you know, a star athlete, and then things kind of went wrong for him, and he's couch surfing and trying to figure out what he's here for and what really drives him. So he's a huge inspiration. Tim Ferriss, because he's literally written the book on how to interview incredibly high profile successful people and how we got access to do that early on when podcasting was just kind of a thing that we thought was, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago that was just gonna kind of be a passing fad. He was one of those guys that made it interesting to hear interesting people. So I do pattern a lot of kind of what I do about how I interview people. Tim's got like 20 questions, the same 20 questions he asks everybody. And I don't do that, but I do have a real passion for really diving deep into how people made it, how they operate their businesses, and how they kind of operate their lives. And then Joe Rogan, I guess I gotta say too. To be honest, when I started my podcast, I had never listened to one podcast. And I know that sounds crazy. Like, why would you do a podcast if you didn't even know what it was? What I knew what I wanted to do with the podcast, and I didn't really want to be swayed by subconsciously, like, beg, borrowing, and stealing from another successful show. But the more I listen to Joe Rogan, the more I really like his format, that it's really open-ended. He does, like, 4 or 5 hour shows sometimes.
Yes.
And he's an incredibly smart guy, so.
Yes, he is.
And you asked me for one, so there's four. I'm an overachiever, Wynn.
But no, I let it go because I'm like, I'll let Ask go on whatever he wants to go on. And so as we tie this interview up, do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, and we kind of alluded to it a couple of times. How did you turn what the world views as a I don't know if I want to say disability because I don't know that it's that.
I'll
at
go
all,
ahead. Disability into ability. Is that what you Amy that yeah? Go ahead.
How did you turn what a lot of people and myself for sure with the diagnosis that you had, how did you turn that into a gift? Like, how did you turn that into a positive force for, like, when did you make that decision and what was your strategy behind it?
Well, the day my mom died, I basically looked at her and she was in a mentally induced coma dying and it wasn't very pretty. And I said, F-U-C-K, I'm going back to journalism school. I had already lost my job. One, I'll go find another job, a stopgap job to cover my butt here. And then F-U-C-K, I'm going back to journalism school. I rode down that hospital hallway like there was no determination. I wasn't even walking at the time. I was still using a wheelchair. And I'm like, people are like, Wynn, what happened to you? And I'm like, I just lost my mom, okay? Don't. And so that's when the lights really clicked. When I sat in the hospital ICU on and off for months dealing with that, that's when the lights really clicked. I mean, I didn't know how I was going to deal with the rest of my life. I knew I was getting a trust fund, but I made a commitment to myself. I wouldn't be working with that trust fund. I wouldn't be sitting on the beach eating bonbons all day once I got done trust fund. And so I said, F-U-C-K, I'm going back to journalism school. And so that's what I'm in the process now of. And so losing my mom really made my brain click. And because I had no one other than my dad to take care of me, and I had to grow up quick. And this was at 23 years old with CP at the time. I knew it as CP. As I said, I didn't know my official diagnosis until I was 31. And so I knew I had CP, but I didn't know the official diagnosis. And so I thought, I gotta make adjustments here in my life.
And that's great. Like, first and foremost, you know, I'm incredibly honored to be on your show for sure, Wynn, because I can't identify with the, you know, with having a physical ailment or an impedimation, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That I don't know that it would take a lot for me to come to grips with that and try to rise above it. I know that depression for me was my ailment.
Yeah.
But for what you've done, you're an incredible inspiration, and I think the more good things are gonna come your way because of what you're doing.
And depression is huge in the disability community. I mean, depression is huge in the disability community. So the fact that you and I want to get it out. And bad me, I haven't listened to your podcast yet. That's going to be my homework after this phone call, is to listen to your podcast. And so maybe
you
and I could collab on something, because I tell you what, Children's Hospital, I swear that Children's Hospital has the worst inpatient food ever, and I swear they do something down under restaurant that makes it all happy, because I went down there as, this was back in 06, you guys, and I went down there as an inpatient down to the restaurant in Children's Hospital, and I swear I had a delicious meal. By the time I went back up to my room, I'm like, what's this? And they,
what happened?
They tried to feed, they tried to feed me pizza, and I was recovering from a back surgery that almost killed me. And I was the oldest patient in there because of my cerebral palsy. And so I think we need to either, you and I need to work on a collaboration with Children's Hospital, seriously, because we need to get healthy food into Children's Hospital, because, and we need to talk about depression in the hospital setting, thank you very much, and we, you and I just need to have a parallel and collab on something here, because we need to get this depression stigma up and out the door.
Absolutely. I'm 100%. Anytime you want to, win for sure.
I will. I will. No.
I think. No. I think it would be a good tandem. Because, like I was saying about Lewis Howes, the, you know, this guy had the star athlete, had everything going for him, and then just abruptly his life ended with what he thought was going to happen for his life. And I was in a similar situation with that, was, you know, hey, I'm the golden boy. I can do anything I want as a chef. And then depression hit me, and I, out of nowhere. And for you and I to be able to tag team and talk about depression in both of those worlds, that, you know, you've got a condition that if you had depression, people would go, well, of course she did. So how do we fix it? And how do we make it less of a stigma? And then on my side of the coin too is, why did this guy have any depression whatsoever? You know, he's got everything going great for his life. So to really, and like we said with Anthony Bourdain, for somebody who had literally the world in his hand, or figuratively, you know, why are we still placing such a stigma on depression when every walk of life, it affects anybody and everybody, race, creed, color, how much money you have, how much money you don't have. It lives somewhere.
Yep. So we need to collab, and I can come on your podcast if you let me and talk about the depression, even though I'm not in the food and beverage industry. I just think we need to get the stigma of depression up and out the door.
Yeah, absolutely. The next time I have a health and wellness show, I will definitely reach out, Wynn, and let's get you on for sure. I think you would be an incredible part of the panel for sure.
Please, no. And I gave up one more thing, you guys. I gave up sugar, and that helped my brain chemistry tremendously, because not only were you, when you go through grief, at least with me, I wanted sugar like there was no tomorrow. So I ate sugar, I ate the brownies, I ate the, finally one day I couldn't physically move, and this was right after I turned 30 in June, and then I couldn't physically move at the beginning of July. And I'm thinking, well, why is CP getting worse with age? And I'm thinking, well, let me just do a little experiment before I drag myself to Children's hospital and check myself in and say, help me, I'm on the floor with CP. And then I realized that was refined sugar. But refined sugar has changed my brain chemistry for the better. So if you're depressed, don't eat. Don't go after the cakes and brownies. Go get help. Help
right.
is easier than going after the cakes and brownies. And I know as chefs, you want to eat everything in sight. And I know with me and Brief, I wanted to eat everything in sight. But go get help, you guys. And I will be on Eric's podcast next time. He does a health and wellness segment. And I will be happy to share my story. And we gotta make a collab to make depression a less stigma subject here, Eric.
Absolutely.
In 2019, because depression is a hidden disability, and I know that you guys suffer just as much as we do, and it's sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, it's a date for sure, Wynn.
Now, Eric, where can people find you?
ChefOrDeath.com. All the links to all the shows are on there, plus my blog, a bunch of fun pictures. Like I said, the sponsorship page is on there as well. You can see my Facebook page. Just look up Chef or Death, and there's also there's all sorts of fun stuff on there. You can find me on Twitter at Eric_Chiapetta, 2 P's, 2 T's. And on Instagram, Eric_Chiapetta, 2 P's, 2 T's. And follow along, and there's always fun stuff. I always give deals out for some of the merchandise every once in a while. So, yeah, it's a fun time. It's a great show, and I'm super happy to be a part of it, to be honest.
Well, good. And keep it going, and I'm always in your corner, Eric, and I hope my team subscribes to it. I'll be subscribing to it. Send my assistant link and say I want Wynn to at least listen to a podcast. And then once we get the health and wellness panel together, I'll be happy to come on as a guest and share my story.
Awesome.
And yeah.
Do awesome, Wynn. Yeah.
And
absolutely. We're going to have a great 2019.
We are. Let's make the commitment right now. And I hope you guys enjoyed this fabulous episode with Eric and I. And I will let you know when the panel comes out. And then I can even share my story further. But I hope you guys enjoyed Eric's conversation. And please, 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 please go get help if you feel suicidal or depression. Please go get help. And I hope you guys enjoyed Eric's conversation today. Thanks to you guys. Bye.
Bye.